Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Tuesday morning, June the 9th, 2026. 16 coming up on 17 minutes past the hour. And as many of you know, this week, WGH Talk and this particular program celebrate 12 years on the air. Our actual anniversary date is tomorrow, June the 10th, 2014. We went on the air. And Thursday night, I should mention that we will have a big live two-hour special celebrating the anniversary here, and that's going to be a lot of fun. 7:15 until 9 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday night. It'll be live, and we've got a lot of great people coming in. But over the course of this week, we are going to celebrate our anniversary. Over 9,000 hours in this particular program have aired on this station, 12 years, and this morning, our guest for the first hour is one of the people who probably made a lot of that possible. Because as many of you know, in the early to mid-1980s and 1990s, cable television was the rage, and WGN television out of Chicago beamed in to this area very, very heavily amongst all the United States and some other places at that particular point. And for young people in those days, the person to get up with every morning was Bozo the Clown. I remember as a child, or a young person, I should say, riding in to be the at-home player on the grand prize game with my grandfather. So this is a touchstone for me. And by the way, the person who portrayed Bozo the Clown from the mid-1980s through early 2000s, a 17-year run, is a great actor, great voiceover talent, as well as dropping maybe an appearance on the Johnny Carson show or two into his repertoire. What a pleasure it is this morning to welcome to these microphones Joey DiOria. Joey, how are you?
Okay, hi, Scott. How are you?
Doing well. Always good to talk with you. What's new your way?
Oh, not much. I'm sort of in forced retirement.
Forced, you say?
Well, you know, we were living in... after the Bozo show ended in 2001, my wife and I moved back to California, and we lived in Altadena. And during the pandemic, my son and his family moved to Idaho. And my wife said, well, that's just too far away. We've got to move. So during the pandemic, we moved from Altadena, California to Boise, Idaho. And it was interesting because while we were away, right after we left our home, there was that huge fire that consumed most of Altadena. And we were shocked to see that our entire neighborhood had been burnt to the ground. So in many ways, we were very lucky to have gotten out when we did.
Well, that's very interesting because I guess that beckons the question, what does an actor who was working very regularly out in California do in Boise, Idaho?
Well, I have a recording booth here in my office at home. And whenever there is voiceover auditions, my agent still sends me out for them. But it's a little more difficult now because even if I am, able to record here, they basically want you there in Los Angeles to go into the studios for them.
Do you still want to travel and do things of that nature?
I would. Right now we're playing the role of grandparents, and so that keeps us pretty busy. My grandson has been attending chess tournaments, and we've had to accompany him to Chicago and Orlando, Florida, and Portland, Oregon for several very big chess tournaments. So he's keeping us busy.
What's it like to be grandpa at this stage of your life?
It's irritating. It is, because yeah, I'm convinced that grandparents are old people, and I sure as heck don't feel old until I look in the mirror, and then I realize, oh, yeah, that's right.
Now, is your grandson aware that you were a children's television star for so many years?
Well, the Bozo show was canceled, was gone long before either of my grandchildren were born. So, but he has seen the pictures, and he's seen a few videos, and he couldn't believe people actually watched that sort of stuff.
Do you think, Joey, that a show like that, done the way it was, because obviously it was not a current event show, so you could drop it in to today's world, do you think it could survive today?
It's hard to say. You know, there are so many children's shows and programming for children that are either animated or computer animated, and even some of the live action things that you can see on, say, Nickelodeon, have very high production values. We were, you know, we were a three-camera shoot inside a studio with a live studio audience, and it would have to have been a real emergency for us to have to turn around and retake a scene. But there was a spontaneity to it and an excitement. It would be hard. We would today's audiences are a bit more sophisticated, and you'd probably have to do a lot just to keep their interest.
You know, Joey, I look back on those days, and I remember the two incarnations of the Bozo show. The first one, which was the Daily Bozo show, was definitely more of an entertainment type of a program. And you had Marshall Brodeen as Wizzo and Roy Brown as Cookie, and a lot more pie throwing and a lot more just flat-out entertainment. And then the Sunday show, as I remember, was seemed like a much more educational version of the show. And no Marshall Brodeen, no Roy Brown, but you did get some other great people involved. Which version did you like the best?
Well, I enjoyed, of course, just doing the pure entertainment version. We had to switch over to the educational and informational stuff in order for WGN to justify keeping the show on the air. FCC requirements require so many hours of, for instance, community broadcasting for children, things like that. But as those rules continued, stations were required to add more educational content. Back in the days when I was watching children's television in the 1950s, what was happening was it was entertainment, and that was, you know, and that was basically it. Because let's face it, it was all so new back then. But today, I don't know. Would shows be allowed to be just entertainment, or would the various rules insist on a higher educational content? It's hard to say. I mean, I watch a lot of shows on Nickelodeon just to, you know, keep up with what's going on. And, you know, there are still a lot of shows that are purely entertainment. And I think that shows that are produced nationally as opposed to local shows aren't necessarily that. When I was living in Miamisburg, Ohio, I used to work at a dinner theater called the Topath Dinner Theater, which was the old Baum Opera House. And one of the fellows I worked with was a fellow by the name of Dave Eaton, who did a local kids show there called The Good Time House, and he played a character called Charlie Goodtime. I don't know if you remember that show.
I do remember that. I do.
You do?
I do.
Oh, well, Dave is a great guy. He's living in Florida now. We keep in touch. But we did a lot of theater in Miamisburg at the Topath. Hmm. And, you know, his show was strictly entertainment. Everything was done for laughs.
Well, I think in those days, WGN, as I said, was everywhere, coinciding with about the time that you became Bozo, took over the role from Bob Bell. WGN mm-hmm. went up on the cable platform and was seen everywhere, and doing a daily show, entertainment show in that era, when everybody was still watching television, the audience must have been huge compared to what anything is on television today. How involved were you in that show, and how hard was it to do a daily show? Were those shot in one day, or did you shoot them daily? How did that work?
Well, when I first started with the show, when Bozo was a daily show, we were working 3 days a week, and we would do two shows a day. And what we would do is we would produce enough shows that would not only carry us through the show season, but carry us into the summer when we didn't do any shows. And so we had to put together quite a bank of shows, and those shows were brutal. We would do one show. We'd come in. We'd rehearse the first show. We'd get into makeup, we'd get on stage, do the first show, go back, the audience would leave, we would come back, walk through the second show, go back, freshen up the old makeup, people would come in, and we would do a second show. Those were wild times. Hmm.
You know, I was thinking about the differences, and obviously one of the differences when the show became the Sunday show and became more of an educational show, there was a different cast at that particular point. And having gotten the chance to work with Marshall Brodeen, he came here and we did a show together, and he came on the radio program several times. You know, there was just something about Marshall that was different. And he... Yeah.
Go ahead.
I could see why he was tailor-made for that character of Wizzo in an entertainment program.
Marshall was unique. He was one of a kind. Working with him, Roy and I basically never knew what would come out of his mouth next, because he was just freewheeling and a lot of fun.
And a tremendous magician.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. My goodness. In fact, he and Roy Brown, I think, used to do a number of magic conventions together. So they did a lot back then.
And Joey, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but, you know, unfortunately, people like Marshall Brodeen in this world are starting to be forgotten. Was he not the first person to use television to sell his magic kits?
I don't know if he was the first. I know that he was one of the people who came on with what they used to call a Svengali deck, which he called TV magic cards. And he would sell the TV magic cards on TV, and those were a national sensation. So I would probably say he was probably one of the first people to sell magic. I really couldn't say for sure, but I know that that's where he made his fortune, as they say, on the TV magic cards. And then later on, he then went into producing magic kits for other magicians. He would actually go to Las Vegas, and he created a magic kit for Siegfried and Roy, and for Lance Burton. People like that, and he would sell all kinds of magic kits. I know that Blackstone, the magician, had a TV, had a magic kit. I don't know if he ever advertised them on TV the way Marshall did, though. Mm.
He was fascinating. I remember the time that he was here, and I don't remember the intricacies of this because I wasn't involved with it, but there was a conversation because he was going to come in and he was going to perform magic at a program, a charity event here in front of a group of people, and uh-huh. he wanted he just I'm going to get my own car. I'm going to fly myself in. I'm going to get my own hotel. And he just did all of that, and he came in. And I remember the first time I met him at a restaurant, which he had already found in town, he was doing card tricks for everybody at his table. He just was a unique person.
He was. Well, he, you know, Roy Brown and I used to tell Roy Brown, when I grow up, I want to be Marshall Brodeen. Because I've never known anyone who just enjoyed life as much as Marshall did.
Yeah. You know, when those characters and those men were leaving the show, Marshall, I think had just said he'd run his course with that particular character, and Roy's health was not that great. Was there any fear that this might be the end of the show or a downturn coming up?
Well, you know, when Roy became ill early on, we brought in several people who kind of filled in for him for a while. Adrian Zemed, who many people may remember from, I think, Dance Fever and E.J. Hooker. Adrian Zemed was in town doing a play, and he would do the play at night and would do the Bozo show during the day. And we had a lot of fun with Adrian. He was a great guy. Mm. And then later on, Michael Immel joined the show as Spiffy the Clown. And that continued for a while until it got to the point that we realized that Roy was not going to be coming back, and we had to find somebody permanently. We held auditions. We held auditions for girl clowns, which the show had never had before, so that was going to be a starter. And we had Kathy Schenkelberg, who played Pepper, and Michelle Gregory, who played Tunya, and they were with the show. And we also brought in Robin Urich, and he played Rusty the Handyman. And then what happened was Kathy left the show to go to the West Coast, and then a year or two later, she left as well, and moved to California. It was just me and Robin from that point on until the end of the show.
When you look back at that particular run, is there a favorite moment of the entire 17 years, and is there a moment that you wish you could forget ever happened?
No, because, you know, as part of, so much of what we had to do was improvisational. It was like, this is the no good deed goes unpunished. There was a little girl in the front row that didn't get picked for the grand prize game. She must have been maybe 7 or 8 years old, and she was there, you know, on her mom's lap, and she was crying because she wanted to get picked for something. So I decided to be a hero, and I took her out of the audience, and I said, we're going to introduce a cartoon right now, and you're going to do it with me, you know? And so I got her on my knee, and we're looking into the camera, and I said, and now we're about to go into a great cartoon. Isn't that right, Kelsey? And she looked at me and she smiled and she said, you know, I don't watch you anymore.
Boy, I'll tell you, everybody's a critic.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
Went, okay, let's go to the cartoon.
Dude,
and that got a lot of laughs.
I bet so.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite moments that will always stick in my mind as my favorite was our very last show where we were playing the grand prize game. And I realized, you know, I said, you know, if the kid only gets to bucket one or bucket two, we still have all of these prizes. What are you going to do with them? And Al said, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Al was my producer. I said, well, look, since it's the last show, let's cheat. Let's let the kids win everything. This way you clear out the toy cabinet. And he went, that's a great idea. Well, so we had the first kid up there, and the ball bounced off of bucket number three. And I said, hang on, that ball was dented. I said, we're going to do another one. And the audience was just gasped. How dare you, you know, deviate from the rules? And by the time we got to bucket four, and I was so blatantly cheating to let the kid win, the audience was going nuts, and I finally went, hey, it's my show. I can do whatever I want. What are they going to do? Fire me?
That's funny.
And I just did that as a gag, but that got a lot of print.
Really? Really? That got written up in the newspapers?
Yeah, people thought that was hysterical, that Bozo literally commented on the show's cancellation.
Well, you know, it's so interesting to me. I talked about the grand prize game in my opening there, but there are people who know the spiel that you did every day with the grand prize game. There are people who I know to this day, seriously, buy Archway cookies because they were a sponsor of the grand prize game for many years. There are people who have made versions of that game at home to play to this day. What is it about six buckets and ping pong balls that got you know, a good 10 to 15 minutes every day on the air?
Well, the grand prize game was invented by Don Sandberg, who played Sandy the Tramp on the show. And at that time, Sandberg was the producer, and Al Hall was the director. And Sandberg created the grand prize game. It was just, you know, something to do interior to the show that would get a little audience participation. And yes, I haven't gone. There is no place I've ever gone where I've talked to people that they've never said to me, you know, I know I could have won that game.
Now that's the real question. How hard was it? Because we're all watching at home and thinking, Bucket 6 is not that far from the taped line. Why can these people not get past Bucket 3 and 4?
Well, ping pong balls don't have much weight to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A ping pong ball is very light. The buckets were made of tin, and people always say, oh, the balls will bounce out, and that was never a fact, because even if a ball went in and bounced out, we would have considered that one in. And we always put cotton batting in the bottom of all of the buckets to keep them from bouncing. But I think it's a matter of reach, it's perception. People think throwing underhand would be the easiest way to do it, and apparently it was considered the hardest. Overhand was the best. It was very funny. We had a Cub Scout on, a boy who had to have been maybe eight or nine, and he was, you know, trying to shoot them underhand, and he only got to bucket 3, but he was tall. And then the next girl was 5. And she was throwing them overhand, but she was right on the level. You know, she had a very pretty good level with the buckets, and each one went in, nothing but net. You know, I mean, it was unbelievable.
You know, it still rings true with a lot of people that is one of their favorite moments from their childhood. And not just kids watch the Bozo show, especially when it was an entertainment program. I think a lot of adults got a lot of entertainment out of that program.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Roy Brown used to say, we're not a kid's show, we're a family show. And there was always, you know, something in there for the parents to laugh at as well. I don't know if I've told you this story before, but back in the days during Bob Bell, when the show was live, they would put the show on in bars and saloons in Chicago, and if guys were in there having their lunch, they would make bets on how far they thought the kid would go playing the grand prize game.
See, even appeals to people in a bar, that grand prize game, that was a genius, genius game.
Yeah.
You know, Joey, there are two big events during your tenure as Bozo that I want to talk about that I don't think we ever have talked about. Just to show the popularity of that show for people who might not remember it or might have been born after that era. But I can't remember if it was a 30th or 40th anniversary of Bozo being on WGN, but there was this big primetime special. Bob Bell was still alive, who was the original Bozo on WGN. He came back dressed in regular clothes. You were there, obviously, hosting the program. A lot of past characters, current characters at that time were on the show. And you sang Be a Clown. It was a big, big special. What do you remember from that special?
Well, that was the 25th anniversary show. And I had only been on the show for 1 year. And so it was really daunting for me, because not only was I going to be, you know, headlining a huge special, which they shot at the Medina Temple stage, which I don't know, I haven't been in Chicago for a while. For a while, it was a Bloomingdale's furniture store. I don't know what it is now. I think somebody told me it was either a restaurant or a casino. I'm not sure. But anyway, the Medina had a huge auditorium. We had real circus acts. We had a marching band come in. We had as hosts, dear me, I'm trying to look at the picture here. We had, oh dear, she was with Saturday Night Live, and he was on WKRP. The names just flew out of my head now. But we had quite a show. It was remarkable. They had our band director. They brought back Bob Trendler, and they literally brought in a whole bunch of musicians. We had a 25-piece orchestra. Mm. So, I mean, it harkened back to the first run of the Bozo show.
Well, was there ever any, I don't want to say anger here, but was there ever any distance that Bob Bell put himself, put between you and himself, you being his successor?
No. He was, the first time I met him was, let's see, was about a week into my first week as Bozo. And I was there, and I was getting ready to go on for another project. And in comes this very distinguished silver-haired gentleman in a three-piece suit. And he was talking with one of the stagehands, and they were laughing. And I happened to be in that area, and he kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "How's it going, Boz?" And I went, "Great, just great. Nice to meet you." I said, "You have to excuse me, we have to do the grand prize game next." And as I walked away, he turned to the stagehand and said, "I don't think he knows who I am." So now I was concerned. I went, "Who was that?" So after we did the bit, I'm backstage with Cookie, and I said, "The guy in the suit." I said, "Is he some executive from Tribune?" And Roy laughed. I said, "No, that's Bob Bell." So that was my first meeting of Bob Bell. And then he stuck around, between shows, and we got to know each other. He was a wonderful man.
Mm. The other program I wanted to talk with you about, which I don't think we've ever talked about before, and this really shows the popularity of the Bozo show in those days, was David Letterman was on NBC at that time doing the 12:30 mm-hmm. program behind Johnny Carson. And at that right. time, the audience was huge on those network television shows. He came to do his show in Chicago, and Bozo gives him a tour of the city. How did that come? And you can watch this on YouTube if you don't believe it happened. what was that like? And what are your memories of that? Or how did it come about?
Well, it was a full day. It was a full day. They started off by sticking me in the general manager's office up at WGN, and that's when he came and he got me, and I came around the desk, and we went to a slaughterhouse, well, not a slaughterhouse, but a meatpacking plant. We went to the Sears Tower. We went to Buckingham Fountain. We had a very busy day, and it was very funny because people every time they saw Letterman, they went, "Hey, where's Paul Schaefer?" And he, after the third or fourth time of people saying that to him, he started to get a little annoyed. And then at one point, I'd come by, and someone says, "Hey, where's Cookie?" And I went, oh my gosh, he fell off the bus. and he said, Cookie, now is that your sidekick on your show? I said, yeah. He says, doesn't it drive you nuts when people say that to you? I said, no, not really. It's, they know, they, you know, they feel like they know me and they want to have something to say. And he kind of shrugged and went, yeah, I guess. But we had a wild time. We went to see the broadcast, which they did at the Chicago Theater, and I was there with my wife and son, and we were watching it. And Letterman came out, and he made a couple of sort of snippy jokes about Bozo, and the audience booed him. And this was during the warm-up, you know, so this was not on camera. But it was the sort of thing to let him know, okay, when I'm on camera, I don't say anything bad about Bozo.
You know, if you do watch that piece, it's interesting, because he does make a few remarks. Nothing is as biting, but, you know, he would say to a security guard, like, watch him.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
But that was funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
It was very funny. But, you know, the thing is, you know, I'm a kids show host. It was kind of silly. And people loved it. And we went all over town.
Well,
we had a great time.
When David Letterman and Bozo the Clown in full costume are going around Chicago, what is that like?
We had a full camera crew with us. We had his writers. We had several other people. We had a couple of executives from, but we had the heads of the publicity department for WGN with me. And it wasn't that we were building crowds. It was like, you know, you go into a city on a busy day. Sure, people are going to see you, but it's not like we were attracting huge crowds.
One thing I wanted to ask in our final 11 minutes here this morning, Joey, at that time, again, WGN had just went national because of the cable station. You became Bozo, but also on WGN, the Cubs went national. And Harry Carey, I believe the same year you came or the year before, had just come to the Cubs. He became a tremendous celebrity, not that he wasn't already, but he certainly became a national celebrity with that shock of white hair and take me out to the ball game in the seventh inning and all the Cubs games being televised on WGN all around the country and beyond. Do you have any memories of doing things with Harry Carey?
Well, it was like my first week on the show, and they brought me up to the broadcast booth at Wrigley. And back in those days, Harry was doing the color for the baseball games with Steve Stone. And Steve Stone liked to smoke cigars, and Harry absolutely hated the cigars. And we're up there in the booth, and Steve Stone holds his cigar in front of me and goes, would you like a cigar, Bozo? And I looked at Steve, and I went, you know, Steve, there's nothing like a good cigar. And that is nothing like a good cigar. And Harry Carey spit beer all over the council.
What kind of guy was he? There's a lot of mythology behind Harry Carey, that he was this gregarious guy, that he was, I know people have written books, that he wasn't the friendliest guy in the world. What kind of guy was he when you worked with him?
When I worked with him, he was always delightful. He was charming. He did a big charity around Christmas time, and I know Roy and I went up to Harry Carey's restaurant and worked with him there. So, you know, he was always very pleasant to me. Mm. You know, when Harry passed away, a number of people would come and take me out to the ball game during the seventh inning stretch. And it was my last week in Chicago. They brought me up, and I had Andy Matran, our musical director, with us, and we did Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and I got a standing ovation.
Mm.
That was incredible. Andy and I were just were just blown away by that.
What was it like to be up there singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in front of a packed Wrigley Field? What's that feeling like hanging out of that window like Harry did day after day for many years?
Well, you know, it was just fun. It was just marvelous fun. I think if I had to use just one word to describe my 17 years in Chicago, it was fun. I know that there were a number of times when I'd be out with Roy Brown, and he would look at me and he'd say, "You know, it beats working for a living."
Yeah, you know, Joey, I was thinking about this last week, because last week we had David Newell on the show, who was Mr. McFeely for so many years on Mr.
Oh,
Rogers'
Oh, yes, I've met him.
He's a wonderful guy. And
yeah.
And he was on the program last week because recently the post office did a survey to re-release a stamp for the 250th anniversary of this country. And there was actually a competition. And the Mr. Rogers stamp from 2018 won that competition by like nearly 40,000 votes over the next competitor stamp in that competition. And, you know, I was talking to David about that because David had to actually get in a get-up. If you actually saw David Newell outside of the Mr. McFeely outfit, he looks nothing like Mr. McFeely. It's totally
right.
Different. What is it about a children's show, a character that resonates like that? You know, Mr. Rogers has been going for 25 years, but yet that stamp still got more votes than any other stamp.
Well, I'm not surprised. But, you know, it's a show that has had longevity, you know? Kids... people have grown up with that show, and their kids have grown up with that show. When I first started doing the Bozo show, I would have grandmothers take my hand and said, "You know, the last time I was here was with her," and she would point to a mother of two small children, and she says, "And now I'm here with my grandchildren." So, I mean, that was pretty much it. We easily, you know, spanned at least three generations during the run of the Bozo show.
You know, Joey, because this is our 12th anniversary week, I want to play a clip from a show that we did February 19th, 2015. This is David Newell on this program, and I thought maybe the audience would get a kick out of this, and then we'll come back and wrap up with Joey Deoria here in just one second. But here's David Newell, 2015, in the studio live, February the 19th.
As I wanted to do, Mr. McFeely.
Yes.
One we did yesterday,
okay.
You sang the Speedy Delivery
yes.
song, and I think people love hearing that. Let's hear it one more time.
It goes like this. Mr. Rogers wrote it. It was just simply a little, at my nut Pavarotti, you know. It goes, if there's anything you want, if there's anything you need, McFeely's delivery brings it to you here with speed. Yes, our Speedy Delivery is a Speedy Delivery. Speedy Delivery to you, Scott.
Well, you know, I was watching the documentary last night, and you and Fred did that on the last episode. That had to have been touching.
That was touching. And sometimes when you saw that episode, sometimes similar episodes happen through the years. And if the program was running long, if Fred saw the cues, "Oh, we have another minute. Oh, Mr. McFeely, why don't you sing your Speedy Delivery song?" But that wasn't the case. What Scott is referring to on this DVD we have called Speedy Delivery, the last appearance that Fred and I did on television was I brought a film to him to see, and that we watched it. And then as I was leaving, I shook his hand purposely. "See you around the neighborhood, Mr. Rogers." And I was saying that handshake, it was my way of saying thank you for all these many years that I've been able to work on the program.
It was brought up in the episode. Mr. Rogers didn't want to do a final show because he wanted it to air in replays.
Uh-huh.
Why do you think he didn't? I mean, was that really the reason after 33 years he just...
He didn't want, I guess, the fuss, I think. And I think it was hard for him to, you know, after you do a program for that long, and he was ready to move on to the next area in his life, which was going to be the internet, working for bedtime stories for children. he really still had a hard time. And I think, to answer your question, the reason he didn't want it extended, he wanted it over with, because the longer you would stretch it out, the harder it would be for him, I think.
Why? David Knoll, Mr. McFeely, on this show, February 19th, 2015. Joey, was it hard to leave Bozo behind?
Well, I know I missed it. I knew I was going to miss it. It was sad, but I think that by the time the show ended, there was a lot of feeling that we weren't able to do as much comedy as we would have liked. By the last 3 or 4 years, I was now writing the scripts, so I had a bit more control over the comedy, and I think we were having a lot of fun. Andy Matran and Robin Urich and I were all saying that if we really thought that if we had one more season left, we really would have made some wonderful innovations and changes, but it just wasn't to be.
How was Bozo canceled? Did you have a decent amount of time before the end? Were you told?
Oh, we were given I think a reasonable amount of notice, but I knew from the beginning that there were a lot of budget cuts going on, and there were a lot of things that they were going to. They had been trying to find a way to cancel the show for years, but they just couldn't because of that 10-year waiting list.
Mm.
They did a number of things over the years to try to whittle down the waiting list, and by the time we were in the last couple of years, we had the ticket requests on a yearly schedule.
Hmm. Would you have?
So
go ahead.
Hmm?
It was a yearly schedule at that point.
Yeah, and so you know, it would have been a lot easier to say, we'll cancel it after this season, and that was pretty much how it was presented to us.
Would you have thought, that was in 2001, here we are 25 mm-hmm. years later, would you have thought that people would still have great interest in this program, and you as Bozo at Comic-Cons and places that you go?
Well, you know, it's starting to fade. What I'm looking forward to is to seeing what David Arquette plans to do with the show in the future.
Is there anything on the horizon that you've heard about?
Not really. I've spoken with David a couple of times. He was going to do a documentary on the history of Bozo. I did an interview with him, and then I recently heard from him that the footage did not come out good, so we're trying to set up another time for me to get back out to the West Coast and do another recording session.
Mm.
But David does a number of things. He goes to a number of events, not only as Bozo, but he is he is an official Bob Ross painting instructor. He learned the Bob Ross method of painting and actually does painting situations or events.
Mm. Do you ever miss doing a daily show like that?
Oh yeah, of course I do. It was wonderful. It was the best job ever. And you know, I think I enjoyed it much more, believe it or not, the about the last year, because I now had a bit more control over the content. And working with Robin Urich, I tell you, I hadn't had as much fun doing the show since I started with Roy Brown, who was Cookie.
Mm. You know, just a couple of questions, Joey, before we run out of time here. Where did you, obviously the voice is not too different from your voice, as people can hear who are listening, but where did you find Bozo's voice?
When you're doing that much talking in the course of the show, you don't want to do anything that's going to exhaust your vocal cords. And so it was more adenoidal than anything. And, so, yeah. And I needed something to kind of contrast with Cookie. So, yeah, it just kind of came eventually. It developed slowly.
Well, Joey, I truly want to thank you for joining us here for this 12th anniversary week, 9,000 hours on the air, because as
well,
I said...
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. You have come on so many times with me over the years, and the audience always enjoys it, because as I said, in this area, you were a fixture for so many years, 17 years. People loved what you did, and I truly believe that when... it's not even about growing up, really. I mean, you could have been a teenager or somebody in your 20s and enjoyed that program beaming out of WGN. So you made people very happy for a very long time. And in a career, that's a very nice thing that can be said. And boy, you did it just about as well as anybody could do it.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
And Joey, before we wrap up, I'm going to ask this just because it's the 12th anniversary week and kind of what I asked David when he was on the show. Can you give us a little grand prize game in the Bozo voice?
Are you all set for lots of fun and fabulous prizes?
To which all of you would say yes.
Great, because it's now time to play Bozo's Grand Prize Game!
Joey, that makes the 12 years worthwhile right there. That did it for me.
Well, thank you.
Hey, Joey, you're the best. Until next time we speak.
I hope so. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on with you, Scott.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The one and only Joey Deoria. How about that? We'll be back right after this.
May all of you get residuals. I didn't see that. I now got a residual for 3 cents.